Well, hello, friends. Mark DeMatteo coming at you with part two of this special little series that I am producing for the Great Questions group called Broken Brains. And I have been a little bit delayed in getting this out to you. Many of you know that I recently, well, actually, it's been 2 years now, this month, November of 2019, is actually marks the 2 years that I've actually had my mom and dad living with me. And we recently put my mom on an in-home hospice service. She has been in a gradual decline for quite some time, and she's doing well overall, but is needing more and more help. And so the hospice has been a big help, but my dad and I are still the primary caregivers, and so it's been a little more involved recently. But it's all good. It's part of life, part of what motivated me to begin this Great Questions quest and finding evidences to provide accurate answers to the great questions of life. And there it is, and it's putting a fine point on our mortality, watching my mom go through this, and a inevitable end that we all come to, folks. And so we really need to know what, if anything, is next. And after quite some time, I know there's quite a bit that's next. So anyway, let's continue on here with part two of this message, Broken Brains. And again, for all of y'all that are new, we want to welcome you to the group, and trust these messages will be an encouragement, enlightening, and a blessing to you. So actually, what I wanted to do as I was reflecting on this and this next part was I thought it might be good to build a little more context as to the situation I was in, or what I have learned, the situation I'm in now, touching briefly on what I've learned since, and what basically became a shift from scientific evidences, which I was looking for in the beginning part of my journey, my overall Great Questions journey, to historical. In other words, giving you a quick overview of really part two of my journey as I get into this second part of Broken Brains. And in part one, I referred to a truth source, that term. And so now I thought I would elaborate a little bit on what I mean as I get into what I learned regarding historical evidences. Now, I already knew that there was a God, and because of that, I wanted to know if he had communicated with us. And I figured it was reasonable to assume that he had, because we communicate. And one of the laws I used, scientific laws, is the law of cause and effect. And for every effect, there has to be an adequate cause. And because we communicate, and I knew he had made us, I figured it was obviously very reasonable to assume that he had. And so it made sense to want to know if he's communicated, because obviously he's obviously of a different order of intelligence than any of us are. And he probably knows more about everything than anybody else on this earth. And so it might be worthwhile knowing what his opinion is, because ultimately he's probably the only one that's holding all the cards, if you know what I mean. And so I wanted to know what he thought, like, to whatever extent I could. And so consequently, what I began doing was I began looking for something that might be of supernatural origin, something that man himself could not have possibly put together. Because again, we're talking about these brains, and I knew this mind of this God had to be, obviously far beyond our particular minds. I already knew that it took a mind to make a mind. I mentioned that in part one of this message. And so you're talking about somebody that actually knows how our brains work, and I'm talking about broken brains, all right? So the one who actually created our mind, the one that is actually sustaining our minds now, knows how our minds function, and is probably the one that can have an impact on how well they're operating. So I wanted to learn about this, and I wanted to see what this God had communicated to us, if he had communicated anything to us. So I began to look for, as I said, something supernatural. Something beyond the ability of man, as I said, to have created by himself, something completely unique, yet something accurate and relevant and practical, something that worked in the world in which we operate in today. And furthermore, something perhaps that might share things that were beyond the realm of anything, you know, I could have imagined. If it came from the mind of God, then it would have been something that, you know, kind of in a sense is transcendent as far as maybe some of the things he's revealed to us, okay? And I also felt like when I was looking for this truth source that it wouldn't be something hidden or obscure, like something just done in secret, concealed in a dark corner somewhere, but rather it might be right out in the open, but maybe not necessarily immediately obvious to everyone or understood by everyone. Sort of what I like to call an open secret. And actually, in my studies, I actually found, from a historical standpoint, two things. I found a unique book, and I actually found a unique person. And, you know, as I mentioned to you, my background was Roman Catholic. I'm a Christian, you know, basic belief system, you know, allowing for, you know, certain doctrinal differences, of course. But because of that, I was already, as I mentioned in part one, exposed to the Bible, at least briefly, a little bit. And I already knew it was considered the Christian holy book, as I mentioned in part one. And number two, always intrigued by the person that the Bible centers on, this person of Jesus of Nazareth, who was is a historic figure. I found that out, okay, but was reported to be the Son of God. As a matter of fact, he claimed to be the Son of God. As a matter of fact, I referred to that previously in a message that I did not too long ago, which you can find on the Great Questions group site, and called Dashes and Dates, and which refers a little bit to that. But what I found out, first of all, was the book, and that actually the Bible is a totally unique book. It's probably the most, well, not probably, it is the most unique book in history. It's actually a book comprised of 66 different books, smaller books. It was actually written by 40 different authors from a variety of different backgrounds over approximately 1,500 years. It's divided into two basic parts called the Old Testament and the New Testament. What's really interesting about it was It was not written by the main person that it centers on, which is throughout the entire book, you know, subtly in the Old Testament, but directly in the New Testament, this, again, historical person called Jesus of Nazareth. And what's in it is again, this person, this historical person, which is unique too. What is in it? It's got a totally unique story within it. The main theme, again, being about this most unique person in history. And again, I mentioned in the Dashes and Date message because I refer to year zero in that and why we actually have one. But it's got a completely unique message as well in this book and about this person and what he did and why he did it. As a matter of fact, the book has got over 300 prophecies, declarations predicting or foretelling the future, which have actually all come true, which is completely unique as well. All right. And what's interesting is it's actually far more about what this God has done for us than what we can do for him. And it's also unique in the sense that it's the only real religious book that was written before the founder of the religion showed up, and it wasn't even written by him. All the others, for the most part, are written by their leaders or by their followers after the leader showed up. This one was written in advance, okay? So the point of the matter is, how do we know that these things are accurate? How do we know that the Bible is accurate? How do we know that anything historically is accurate? Well, again, as I mentioned, we have historical evidences that share these things with us, all right? And so, in other words, how do we know that certain events in the past actually took place? All right. Like, for instance, how do we know that Julius Caesar really lived? Well, the first thing we would do is we would look for eyewitnesses. All right. And if there are eyewitnesses still living, and the more of them that can verify a particular story, the more evidence historically that constitutes. Number two, archaeological evidence. That's digging up certain things, buildings. We hear of a city. We find the ruins of the city, and that is great evidence. But predominantly, what we find as evidence, or probably the main source that most historians use ancient history, they look for collaborating written accounts of a particular story. Okay, so this has often been called manuscript evidence, but just keeping it very simple, it's collaborating stories, old ancient stories that they have found that basically tell the same story, all right, collaborate it, in other words. And it's a question of the more evidence there is for these things, the better. And what's interesting is, what I have found in my studies is that, in other words, let me just say this to you, okay, regarding that evidence. You know, we find a story that maybe has one account of it. Well, there's the possibility. But if you start getting into 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 or 50, then obviously the evidence or the probability of that event actually taking place increases. Well, to kind of give you an idea of the context of, again, the evidence for the historical manuscript evidence for the Bible, it's rather unique. Many of you have heard probably of something called Homer's Iliad. All right, it's actually a story about Greece, the ancient Greeks and Troy, the Battle of Troy. If you've seen the recent movie called Troy, it's the ancient story of that. All right, and Homer's an ancient Greek poet, and he wrote that. And actually, it is one of the most well documented ancient, very very ancient stories. And when I was doing my studies at the time, there was a little over 600 collaborating manuscript accounts of Homer's Iliad, which is quite a bit. As a matter of fact, other than the Bible itself, it had the most ancient manuscript document proofs. The Bible itself is in a completely different class, though. Just for the New Testament alone, when I was actually initially doing my studies and my journey, there were over 20,000 collaborating portions of manuscript that collaborated the stories, the text of the New Testament. Now I understand there are close to twice that because of recent findings. They keep uncovering them. So in other words, folks, there was no comparison to the actual context of the accuracy of the scriptures, the Bible, the accounts, the manuscripts that actually put that book together. And so what it told me was that it was in a class by itself. And what it also did was the stories that it told kind of put a unique light, because it talked about this individual called Jesus of Nazareth, and it actually talked about his unique arrival. And I'm going to elaborate a little bit more on that in part 3 of this message, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly outline what the Bible says. What does this book say? I, as I mentioned to you, I knew a little bit about it, but that will actually build even a little more context, and I'm just going to do that quickly, nothing in depth. But I'm going to go over that briefly before I actually read this passage in the book of Romans that I referred to, which was read to me many years ago. Again, just kind of quickly reviewing part 1, which astounded me because it read like the front page of a newspaper or a news blog that is current today. And it was written 2,000 years ago. And not only that, what it did was it shed some amazing light on what was really going on behind the scenes. And as I said, because I've had so many people recently asking me what seems to be going on with people of late and all this strange behavior that seems to be going on in so many different arenas, what is the cause of this? And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, and that will be actually in part 3. Okay, so for the time being, as always, it's been a pleasure sharing a little bit of this with you. Hope it's illuminating and enlightening, and look forward to having the chance to speak to you next time, which hopefully will be a lot sooner than it was between part one and part two. Okay, take care, folks. Bye-bye now.